Hello, and welcome to that Eurovision podcast, Eurovision with a slice of life. My name is Rory, and I'm not doing too bad today. It's a Thursday now, and I'm just kind of relaxing, and I'm getting ready for the weekend, because I'm going on a little mini break, so I'm like really looking forward to it, and joining me?
Jazzy, not done too much today, just been a nice, quiet, relaxing day, and I'm really excited to talk about the topic that we're going to talk about today.
Hi, it's Rosie, and I've literally just gotten out of a meeting that overran by an hour and a half, so I am stressed! So I'm hoping that Rory and Jazzy's chill vibes will, like, penetrate through the internet to me.
I'm sending good vibes, good vibes.
Thank
sending
you.
Sending vibes.
Vibes, good vibes.
Tim here. Yep, just finished work half an hour ago. But to be honest, I'm more looking forward to the weekend because I get to go to my second home, which is IKEA. How sad.
Aww,
and buy some more Swedish chocolate, which is the main reason I'm going there other than buying furniture. But yes, it's a very good day and I am very excited about this episode because it's very, very close to my heart.
Oh, well, it makes sense, wasn't it? Because it's all played such an important part in our life.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, mostly as well, I am just very jealous at the fact you're getting to go to IKEA because there's only one IKEA in Ireland and it's in Dublin and it's 4 hours away. And I'm like, I'm very jealous, very jealous. But so in this episode, we're going to be talking about the most recent contest to take place. That would have been 2020 had there not have been a big pandemic going on, but alas, here we are. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about 2019 as a contest, and for this, we actually have a fantastic guest. We have a good friend of the podcast, Andrew.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. Can't complain too much. It's still very early here.
Very early. Again, I really do hope that we haven't like completely dragged you up in the depth of night or anything. Oh, dear.
It's all good.
Fantastic. So in 2019, the contest was held in Tel Aviv, Israel, after Netta had won with Toy in Lisbon, and 41 countries took part. It was supposed to be 42, but if you'd listened to the Ukraine episode, which you can listen to on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you find out that unfortunately didn't it turn out to be the case. So instead we only had 41 countries taking part and it was won by the Netherlands and Duncan Lawrence with Arcade. So just to kind of like kick things off, I guess, is like how do you think 2019 sort of compares with some of the more recent contests of the time? So like 2016, 2018, because a lot of fans see those sort of in the same ranks.
Well, I kind of agree with them, but to get to where 2019 was, let's just say it was not easy for the love of God. The moment Netta won, it was just a question of, will they host it? Won't they host it? Will they host it? Won't they host it? Drama here, drama there, you know, scared here. Are we going to have to move the contest somewhere? Everybody panic, everybody ensues, expensive tickets. I mean, despite the
Crimea
small...
Crimea
is Ukraine.
Uh-oh.
You know, it was just like left, right, and center throughout. And, you know, despite the fact that it was such a smaller venue, including the fact that it was also used for Fire Saga, it actually ended up quite well, and it's got a good production value. It took a long time to get there, but, you know, they do say good things come to those who wait. And I think Israel managed to fulfill that with what they had at the time, in my personal perspective.
My personal opinion is it wasn't the best contest that was hosted in recent years, but it wasn't the worst either. I'd probably rank it just somewhere in the middle in terms of like the hosting, in terms of the show. It wasn't as good as 2016. However, I do feel it was better than 2018 and 2017 in terms of how it presented itself and how like the show ran and the interval acts and keeping the audience engaged, because like I feel with 2017 it felt very like it just didn't feel very well presented and didn't feel very well thought out, while 2018 was very, very well thought out, but it sometimes it felt like the interval acts dragged and didn't really have very much to do with Eurovision at times. However, 2019 kind of, although again the interval acts sometimes did drag and sometimes felt unnecessary, I will move on to that later. And obviously there was points where like I feel like the voting was like an hour in the final. I don't know if it actually was, but it felt like that in Euroclub in Tel Aviv. So yeah. So it's like not as good as 2016. I do rank it higher than 2018 and 2017 in terms of production value.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that. I mean, I have it like one step below like 2016, 2018, but I mean, I think overall, I think it was the intervals that dragged the most for me. Just, I mean, it was just a lot of it that felt kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah,
some of them were just like so not worth it and so not needed.
4 hours.
It's been 4 hours. Get over it.
Can I just point out to our listeners, on that day, I have been in Tel Aviv for 2 weeks. I was very sleep deprived, like waking up early and going to bed like 3 a.m. the next day. And you're only having like 4 or 5 hours sleep. And also with the fact that the show did not start till 10 p.m. And yeah, for the grand final, did not start till 10 p.m. and finished about 2:30, and then got to Euroclub at 3 and finished about 7 a.m. and I was awake at 9 a.m. the day before.
That's commitment. That is commitment.
Yeah. I just went to Euroclub while I was in Tel Aviv. I didn't go to any of the shows. However, like, but it just felt like I was like getting home at 6 a.m. and my flight back was at like 1 p.m. the next day.
God, I don't know how you did it.
Yeah. And I was like, and also because of the fact that Israel's so strict, I was like, okay, I have to be there at the airport 3 hours before my flight because you have to go through so much security. You're just like, ah!
Like, the problem was, though, it wasn't, like, for me anyway, it wasn't getting into Israel, it was getting back out and getting back into the UK. And I don't know if that is anything to do with Brexit. But they really questioned why I wanted to go back to the UK, like, after 9 days. And I don't know if that is to do with Brexit or...
That's just the way Israel does their thing. Like, because I went before I went for Eurovision, I did a quick trip to Tel Aviv and they asked me the same questions. Why were you here? What did you do? Where did you stay? But yeah, a lot of questions.
Very uncomfortable questions.
Yeah. Yeah, and glad to know that I got through it fine with no problems because I'm here right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
I can't say the same thing.
I think for me, I really love 2019, and I'm kind of just going by the quality of songs alone. There are so many fantastic songs from that year that whatever I think about the hosting and everything else and the fact that things sort of dragged on forever, I don't care. I love so much of that year. It's not my favourite of the decade, that still goes to 2014, but it's close. There are some absolute classics, and there are so many things that I absolutely love about the contest that are exemplified this year. So yeah, I really love it as a year, and I could go back and listen to a lot of the songs again and again.
Yeah, I think like 2019, it was definitely like another year where like the song quality was like through the roof. I think 2019 was quite possibly one of the best years in terms of sort of national selection quality of songs and the like chosen ones, because there were so many songs in 2019's like national selections that I would have happily had like in any other year I would have loved. It was just a shame that so many of them had to come in at the one time. But I think it was a very strong year. I'm not gonna lie, it was a little bit chaotic to say the least. But it was chaotic, but I think, you know, Khan did manage to put on a very strong show, and I think, you know, there was a lot that was going for it, and I do kind of wish that maybe some parts of it were shaved down, because my god, 4 hours, you know, when you're trying to host a Eurovision party with like about 20 to 30 drunk young adults, I think it just doesn't help very many people. because when it just goes on for like an hour and a half, just for like waiting for a certain interval act to come on, and they're just like, where is it? And I'm like, I don't know.
But yeah. And there was even doubts of whether or not that certain interval act was going to happen. Because I was in Tel Aviv and we were just like, initially got confirmed, and then what now? Because they weren't officially confirmed until the week itself. And then when the week itself came, it's like, will they? She's already rehearsing there. Mm. And it took them 2 days before the show. It's like, yep, she's definitely appearing.
Bit late in the day, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but she was rehearsing.
Look how it turned out in the end, anyway.
Well, can't say she didn't have it coming. So just kind of looking towards like the kind of interval acts. I think the main one that we need to bring up now that we've sort of mentioned her is Madonna. And, you know, having like the hype build up for her for so long, cause there was a hint that she possibly could go. But then the fact that it would require like $1 million in order just to sort of allow her to perform. And then, you know, having to get an Israeli billionaire just to pay for it, and then having that come out as the finished product. I mean, Andrew, like, as like an American, like, how did you feel about like your country being represented by Madonna in that way?
I mean, the performance itself, I wasn't a fan of. And it was definitely weird to see, like, I guess it being such a big European thing to have, you know, one of American pop royalty just throw themselves in.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange thing, because like we'd had that before, hadn't we? We'd had it with Justin Timberlake in 2016.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was most of that was to kind of promote the fact that Trolls, like the film was coming out. So it was more of a benefit, as in like, okay, I get promotion for this film and you get to have me at a singing competition. So like, it's not like we hadn't had it before, but if you were to compare Justin Timberlake and Madonna, who would you prefer, like, out of the two?
Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake.
He's bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I wouldn't have minded Madonna, but the only thing was, we knew that she kind of lip-synced the second track, and had she maybe put something consistent on, aka just use lip sync for both of it, then maybe I wouldn't have minded it. But then I was just looking at the first performance, and I was in, because I got a ticket for the final through Eurovision Diaries, and I was in the arena. I was just like, what on earth is this? And I was just like, you could have just used auto-tune. And then when she uploaded the actual performance on her Vivo account, I was just like, who are you gonna fool here?
When the original is literally on YouTube already.
Yeah. And we were just like, who are you gonna fool here? We've already seen the performance, Madonna. We know how it sounds.
We know it's awful.
But I am gonna give props to that sound engineer who was able to do that and made it look so flawless. Give that guy a raise.
Yeah, they deserve a Grammy, should I say.
Yeah.
Thing is, I actually really liked Future. I really did not like Like a Prayer. I really did not like that like version of it at all. It was a complete mess. But I actually really like Future as a song. Mm-hmm. And like soon as it came on, I actually put it on my Spotify playlist, and I do consistently listen to it. But
what really pissed me off is like, you know, you could have, I mean, as much as I loved that it was a 30th anniversary of Like a Prayer, you could have sung Hung Up. Just because of the fact that it's Eurovision related.
Somewhat. A little bit.
Yeah, but still, like, Eurovision, like, there's the connection at least, and we'd know that connection. And, you know, Tel Aviv is known for a party, bring something upbeat, but apparently that was not what she was going for.
Nope. She was there to make a statement, and that was it.
And I can't listen to Like a Prayer without just going in my head, this song is about blowjobs.
I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
I was today years old.
I did not know that.
Oh my god.
Okay, Rosie's just shattered an entire illusion of this whole woman now. Can we just cancel Madonna now?
I mean, I think she's already cancelled. I think I'll kill Tim.
But yeah, so overall, Madonna, a little bit problematic. A little bit. But to be fair, I do think the way that she managed to kind of bring that little bit of controversy at the end with all of the people getting up, all the dancers getting up, and one of them had having the Israeli flag and the other one having the Palestinian flag. I think that was... we knew that there was something that was going to happen, but we just didn't know what. And I think that was how it was going to play out. I think when it happened, I think I was like, oh my God, what is this? We were all like, oh my God, I can't believe she did that. Little did we know what was coming. But so looking at the sort of 2019 songs, who would be your third, second, and first? Who wants to kick it off?
I'll kick it off. Okay. My third place is the lovely supergroup, which is Kano and Spirit in the Sky. It's mostly just because of the fact that all three of them represented something, and that blended quite well. Same with the song. And I also like the fact that they've really embraced the Eurovision experience. I was with them on four or five pre-parties, something like that. And they were really professional, you know, despite the hectic schedule. And the fact that they're still popular now with the Eurovision fans is quite amazing. And also stream Okta for Clear Skin.
My third place is Luca Hani, She Got Me. I do want to give an honourable mention to Kano and Spirit in the Sky. That is my fault. I've gone between the two a lot.
Yeah.
But I've got, based on the live performance and based on the show, I would go for Luca, just because I do personally think it is the best live performance and package in the whole of the 2019 final. And I was in Euroclub, and there was just like a buzz when Luca performed, and I thought at some points he could have won the whole thing. Just, you know, when you just get a scent, like a feeling or a scent of like the atmosphere changing.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I got in Euroclub when he performed, and I've fell in love with it from then, because I just think it was like just one of those special moments for me in Tel Aviv.
I will be very quick for my third place because, okay, so my second and third place switch, so I'm just going to be sort of whichever's the quickest. And my third place is also Kano with Spirit in the Sky, because I think it's a joy and I adore it. That's it.
Little nutshell. Bite size.
I have to go with Zero Gravity. Like, just the staging alone, like from the... from Australia to size, I was just mind blown by the whole thing. And that was the one I had going into it.
I think as well, like, because obviously they'd like hype the staging up so much since like the national selection. So like we had no idea what it was like going to be like in terms of the actual staging. And then when rehearsal started coming out and we saw really what she was doing, that was amazing. But yeah, my third place, back to kind of craziness, it's Poland with Pali Share by Tulia. I am a big, big fan of that kind of ethnic sort of white voice singing style and makes sense why I really like Solovey now this year. And it was cruelly robbed of its place in the final just because of a sort of a jury mistake. But do you know what? I could live with it because it was all right. When it came down to like the last qualifier and who knew what it was going to be, I thought, okay, I'm willing to sacrifice Poland if Slovenia manages to get in. And then Slovenia managed to get in, so it's all right.
I have a bone to pick with you about that. I really hated Slovenia that year. Really hated it.
Okay.
It was, I don't know how it qualified. I really don't.
But yeah, so second place.
Oh God, you love my second place. And all I'm going to say is, girl.
Yeah.
Yep. And I really like this one because I've seen what North Macedonia had gone through for the past 8 years. And I've just about had enough. And I think MRT was in the same position. And I'm really quite happy that they sent Tamara just because of the fact that she knows what kind of artist she is. And she kind of knew what she wanted or what song she wanted to send to Tel Aviv. And it worked quite well for her. I mean, despite the fact that she did not promote this, she ended up doing so well and ended up winning the freaking jury vote. And I really love the fact that from day one, I actually believed in her when nobody did. Even when they said, nope, she's not going to qualify. And look who got announced first. And if you look at the ESC Extra YouTube channel and you find the reaction video, you'll see how I completely lost it.
I saw it there recently and I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I'd have imagined it.
My second place, and again, it kind of comes from a place of supporting them right from the beginning of their Eurovision journey, like from the moment they were picked, and it's Mickey and Lavenda. It was my number one through the whole pre-party season. Obviously something changed, but even like I get that some people don't like the staging, but personally it was colorful and I enjoyed it. And it's just one of those songs that just makes me happy, and when Mickey performs it, I just feel like I like a song that just like makes me feel joyful. And again, it's just a song that brings like great memories, because every time it came on in Euroclub, like, it was just my song. And oh, so much.
Oh, but
Lavenda,
the thing is,
Lavenda deserve top 10.
Mm-hmm. The thing is with Lavenda, like, whenever it came on, you just hear everyone singing along, don't you?
Yeah.
Like even afterwards, you're just like, oh my God, everyone is lip syncing to this. This might actually, every time we keep saying it, like, this could be Spain's year where they actually get out of the bottom five and it never ends up happening. But then we always end up with a bop that we always love.
Yeah.
It's a shame, though, because, like, although, Mickey deserves so much better.
There was an improvement with the tally vote.
Too bad it came at the expense of the jury, though.
Dang.
So my second place has actually already been mentioned, and like I said beforehand, my second and third are pretty much equal, so I was just going by what was fastest to talk about. But my second place is Zero Gravity by Kate Miller-Heidke. Again, it's beautiful. I love the story behind it. And the way that she smiles at the end when she's just finished is possibly the most heart-melting thing I've ever seen in my life. And I really like opera. When I was younger, I trained sort of semi-professionally in theatre and opera singing. I used to sing at weddings and stuff, as like a young child / early teenager. And so I've always had a love for that sort of music. So yeah, it makes me happy.
I had France, Belar at two. I mean, it's just, the song is like, this is the song that grew me the most in the Eurovision season. Just by the time we got to Tel Aviv, I was just in love with it and still am. Like, I just get goosebumps every time I listen to it.
See, I never really got the hype with Bilal. See, I had so many other favorites in Destination Eurovision, but I mean I was happy for him, you know, like, because obviously, like, the symbolism that he had in his performance, you know, like, obviously with, like, with the deaf performer and then obviously someone who was sort of overweight, I think, you know, in itself, I, you know, breaking boundaries, and I think that's something that's really, really nice and respected. But yeah, my second place, it was my first place for so long until recently, and then I've only just started to kind of get back into listening to it again. It's Romania, Esther Peony on a Sunday. I really preferred it before the revamp, and then the revamp happened, and then I was a bit like, but I don't know. I don't really understand how people didn't like this as much. But then again, the whole reason why it got selected was a whole big controversy within itself. So I think we should probably save that for a Romania episode.
Let's just say a certain other singer should have really took the stage in Tel Aviv. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know who that is.
Oh, who could that possibly be?
And also, I will never forgive a certain Eurovision winner for not giving it any points.
Is there going to be beef happening now?
I mean, luckily enough, I met them a couple of weeks later and there was, so I was able to hold my temper.
Just about. yeah, so shall we talk about our winners?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. And all I will say about my winner is... all I know, loving you is a losing game. Of course it's going to be Arcade. Like, I mean, I know as much as I love Tomato with my heart, Duncan hooked me in within the first listen. And my perception of it winning never changed throughout, despite me going through the parties and everything, and it went okay. And look at it now, a year later, he's done an EP, and hopefully we'll get an album before the contest in 2021, where he has to give up the trophy as the longest reigning winner ever.
Take it and run.
Yeah, Duncan's,
I mean, it's what he deserves.
Yeah. Duncan did a good job on representing the Netherlands, and he deserves that crown with all his might, and I can't wait what the future will hold for him.
Oh, okay. My winner is, but I'm not going to sing it because I cannot speak Icelandic, Patrick von Sigra by Hattery. Just, it's so different, and just, it's one of those, it drew me in from the very first performance, and I was just, like, in love. Like I said, I had a real battle of the wills in 2019 between this and Lavender. So it took me a while to make it my first place because I really didn't want to dethrone Lavender. But I feel like out of like any season, like these are probably two, like my top two are like, it's probably the year where my top two are the closest. Mm-hmm. But they're so polarizing.
Yeah, they're literally like so different.
I think I like it like that because it's like, how do you make a choice?
That's like apples and oranges, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the performance and the song feel to me so is like captivating. And what were you going to say to Rosie?
I was saying that I feel so original here because every single one of my answers has been said by someone else, and my number one is also actually.
It just shows you've all got taste.
But yeah, I completely agree with what Jazzy said. And I mean, that song was kind of made for me in that I'm also a kinky lefty who hates capitalism. So, of course, I was going to take to it. And to be fair, I wouldn't have ever said previously that I would be into sort of Icelandic EBM techno music. When I say that 2019 expresses so many of the reasons why I love the contest, it is again about there being music in there that I would never have said that I would be interested in, and yet still completely falling in love with it. And I've followed Hattery since the contest. I've seen them live. I should have seen them live again, but Corona happened. They're just fantastic. I'm so completely taken by the ethos of the band and their humor and their style and their experimentalism. And I feel like it's something that's so different, but it's something that really, really works for me.
It's almost like perfect. Like, it's literally the song for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess it's been mentioned before, but Proud. Like, that was a song that just stood out for me from Crow's version. Maybe because I was just going to see Captain Marvel, like, the day the music video dropped, but I didn't know what to describe it. It was just perfect.
Aw. I mean, like, literally, North Macedonia did so well, and I really just hope that, like, now going on, like, North Macedonia knows what they're doing and, like, takes it slow, doesn't completely mess up the staging, because we're looking at you, North Macedonia. We're looking at you, Mary Popova. That's a personal call-out to the head of delegation. But, yeah, honestly, that was... when she, like, did so well in the jury vote, I was, like, shocked, and I was so happy for her. It was just a shame that, like, she just didn't get to have her moment, like, at the last minute between her and Duncan. Like, oh, such a shame. Such a shame.
There's a funny story about that when I was the jury vote. I was inside the hall when they were giving out the votes. And out of everyone at the back, I was the only one with the North Macedonian flag. So imagine Tim, who really liked Tamara's entry, and every time she's getting a 12 points, just cheering along, and everyone was just looking at me, and I was just like, y'all slept on this. Let me have my moment. Don't you dare judge me, because I was the one who stuck my neck out and wanted her to win.
Tell them, raise your voice and say it loudly.
Yeah, and I was just like, y'all can judge me. I do not give. And I was so happy when she nearly won. I was like, okay. And then when I found out a few days, I was like, what? She won the jury vote?
History in the making.
It was just so nice to see after so many years of heartbreak from Macedonia, because I feel like they had songs that were really high quality, but there were like aspects that just missed the mark. Yeah. And then it all kind of like came to a head at the end of the decade, and I just thought it was really, really sweet. And I was just so happy for Tamara. I was so happy for North Macedonia. And I can't think of anybody in the fandom who wasn't. Like, it was just a moment that we all deserved.
I think as well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe she was the first winner of the jury vote that was from Eastern Europe since like its introduction in 2009.
Uh-huh.
So that in itself is like big, like, news, you know? Shows that there's no such thing as a Western bias now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my number one, it has technically been brought up, and it is Zala Gašper and Sebi from Slovenia. Now, I know Tim doesn't like him.
Of course.
But, like, literally, this is the sort of music that I would just listen to, like, outside of a Eurovision context. Like, it's just so chill. It's just, like, it's exactly what you need just to sort of just, like, take a minute, take a breather. And I might have said this before on the podcast, but my sort of go-to sort of song is always the sort of one that you can always just, like, put some good headphones in and, like, just listen to it in the middle of the night where there's, like, no cars going along the road. You can just sort of just, like, just be at one with yourself. And, like, that is, like, the exact sort of song for me. And it just does it so well. And I just don't understand why people slept on it so much, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I'm ready for the hate, Tim, but...
No. I'm gonna be neutral here and respect people's opinions.
That's until we stop recording.
Yeah, exactly.
I've posted my opinion on Sebi. I have basically, like, I basically said it's not the, like, I don't dislike it and I don't hate it.
Yeah.
But I don't get the hype at the same time. Like, it's kind of a song that's just there for me.
Mm.
It's like it's a take or leave song.
Well, let's remember that out of the two songs that were in the super final, I do believe Sebi would have definitely done better than Chaos. Cows.
No, that's what annoyed me.
Oh my god. Oh, remember what Leah's reaction was when Cows didn't win?
Oh yeah, and she was like, What? Because she was fully expecting Raven to go, and then no.
That was so funny, Cows, though. Like,
I know everybody loves Raven, but Cows is probably one of the most annoying songs I've ever heard in my life.
Well, it's all right now because Raven said she's never coming back to AMA again. So, you know, Slovenia knows what they need to do if they want to be like somewhat progressive and not send Omar Naber again. just send Raven, because God knows she fucking deserves it at this point, you know. So like, kind of, what for you is like the sort of main sort of memory that you'll always have from 2019, like as a year?
In what sense?
Like in a Eurovision sense, as in like what's the one thing that you'll always remember from Eurovision 2019?
And I'm sorry to just be a little bit selfish here, just a tiny bit. 2019 was the first year where I covered the event as press, as with ESCX, so I'm just plugging it down there.
Shameless.
But yes, Israel treated us with such great hospitality. I got to meet most of the artists on the ground and managed to interview them. And the fact that even though I was tired, I was happy and content with the content I've produced for the site. And if you guys get a chance, check it out. And I hope that, you know, everything goes back to normal in 2021 and then would be as, you know, fan sites were able to bring you the best coverage for the listeners and the viewers alike.
Well, that's what we're going to try to do next year. Fingers crossed, yeah. If we get the press pass.
I got a bit, like, I say that my favorite, like, experience was just being in the Euro Club. Because while I wasn't in the press, I did get to go into the Euro Club and I got to, like, meet people from the press, got to meet, like, the acts. And it was just a really surreal experience, but it was really fun at the same time. Although, I wish I'd had a little bit more confidence to go, literally, like, say hi to an act. But I thought, they're having a drink, they're busy, I don't want to disturb them. So, I didn't.
Jazzy, just come find me next time.
I don't feel like I have quite the same memories, because this was, so 2019 was sort of my first year really amongst the Twitter fandom and things like that, but I wasn't at any events or anything like that, and I wasn't watching most of the national finals, though I will say Kinky Boots was robbed.
That's Samson, if you're listening to this, better. Please come on.
But I did host my sort of usual Eurovision party, ended up having my partner throw up all over his slippers, miss the voting and go to bed, and woke up halfway through the night and turned to me and goes, "Who won?" And then he went back to sleep again. So here to shame him. But my sort of main takeaway, and actually I've already said it, I think, and it's that smile that Kate Miller-Heidke gives once she's finished singing. I go back in my mind to that shot every so often, and sometimes I just rewatch the performance and get emotional and cry a bit, because it's the most beautiful thing I have ever seen, and it's just, you can't not look at it and be happy. So that is my biggest memory of the night. It just, yeah. I'm having a bit of a cry.
Aww.
Virtual hug.
Virtual hug. We're doing hashtag hugs for TEP.
Hugs for tap.
Hugs for tap.
Hugs for the Euro fandom.
Oh, yes.
It was my first year watching the semifinals, so definitely, like, Netta's open performance, just, like, just having her perform Toy and just having the arena just, like, go insane. Like, I just get goosebumps thinking about it. It's definitely, like, the moment that, like, committed me to being a Euro fan.
Aww.
Aww.
I always love that. You know, like, when you've, like, you've just started to introduce someone to, like, Eurovision, and then they're like, oh my god, what is this? I think that, like, you never get that same feeling ever again. So it's like, you know, keep a hold of that memory, because it's so, like, oh, you know?
This is going to sound really weird, but I feel like if 2019 had been cancelled, I'd have been so much more crushed than I was this year.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I developed, like, real emotional attachments to these acts, to these songs. It's like, if it had been cancelled and taken away, I don't know what I'd have done.
Thank God we managed to have, you know, only 2020 happen then, because I don't think we could have dealt with it, like, a whole, like, depressed fandom. This is not what we need in our lives.
Yeah, 2019 was, like, the most I traveled for Eurovision, and I really loved that, and I wish I could have a 2019 part two. So, you know, Israel, make sure that Eden's song in 2021 is great, that we can go back to Tel Aviv in 2022. Thank you.
Well, hopefully it's Tel Aviv. Hopefully.
It will be. It will be, trust me.
Like, they're just going to have Nadav on stage again going, before I leave, let me show you Tel Aviv again.
Or how about, imagine, like, Netta would be on stage, it'd be like, see you in XXX.
let's see you in Haifa, and then we find out, oh wait, no, it's in, like, Eilat or something, or something, like, just no. Yeah, so I'm going to have to do a bit of a cop-out, and I have to pick two memories. But so the first one is, it's during the selection period, because similar to Rosie, I still had gone to any sort of, like, pre-parties or, like, any sort of Eurovision event. So I still was very much thought I was in my own little bubble, kind of. So I started sort of watching the national selections in the midst of sort of January, February time. And I started getting a few of my university friends into watching it as well. And they'd come over every single week, and we'd watch, like, different selections, and we'd listen to them. We'd think, oh, that's a good song. Oh, yeah, that's a good song too. Oh, I don't like that one. And I think that was, like, a really lovely memory for me, because I never really thought that, you know, Eurovision, like, they would ever really care about Eurovision, especially because, you know, they're from the UK. They have a pretty terrible idea of what Europe is anyway, you know? And then the other one is during the final, because during the final, I've said it a few times on this podcast, I have a bit of a house party whereby I invite loads of people around, and, you know, we have drinking games, and then when it comes to during the voting, you get a country, and if that country gets 12 points, then you have to do a shot of vodka or any sort of alcoholic drink. Responsible drinking, obviously, you know, because, you know, this is a very family friendly podcast, but it's always something that you never wanted to have, like, have the winner with. And I just simply remember two of my friends having to go back and forth, because one of them had Italy and the other one had North Macedonia. And then they were going back and forth having the shots. And then by the end of the night, I just simply remember about four or five people in my bathroom just throwing up simultaneously. Like, let's just say no one wanted to go into that bathroom for the next 2 days. Like, that's legitimately how it was. So that's they're like the two memories that I'll always have for Eurovision 2019, because, you know, I managed to get so many people involved in it, and it's gotten to now to the point where literally in this upcoming season, and hopefully with all the national selections, I'm having like two or three people come over to my new house. And if any of you are ever in Manchester, including Andrew, if you ever make it over to the UK and you're ever in Manchester, you feel free to come over. We'll watch national selections together. But awesome. So kind of like any sort of like final points on 2019 as a year.
I really love Asi. Like, who wouldn't love him?
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Icon.
He's the epiphany of a Eurovision fan who basically had his dream come true and even gets to host the show. I mean, for crying out loud, he even met his idol, Madonna. So,
like, that's doing something. Know,
yeah, so if Israel does host again, please do not forget about Asi, because he was really good to us Eurovision fans. And he embodies the spirit of the contest and carries the weight for the fans, because he knows what we want and he understands us.
If there's a there will be a 70th Eurovision special in
2026 or something.
I want Petra and Asi to host it.
Ooh.
Ooh, I'd like that.
Oh, I would happily get a ticket for that.
With Anke Engelke and Philomena Cartella in the green room.
Yes.
Can we have Conchita in the green room too?
Yeah, sure, why not? Let's just chuck everyone in. Yeah, so that takes us to the end of this episode of That Eurovision Podcast. I'd really love to thank Rosie, Jazzy, Andrew, and Tim for coming along. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining us on the podcast. I really hope you had a fantastic time.
I definitely did. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us. We've loved having you on. And yeah, so, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we'll be carrying on with our country perspectives. We have a few surprises along the way. Hopefully nothing too controversial, but can't make any promises. And yeah, so in the meantime, please do continue to follow us on all of our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at That Euro Podcast. We're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. So make sure you get notified there, or make sure you follow us there so that you always get notified whenever a new episode comes out. And yeah, so shall we all say goodbye? Bye!
Bye!
Bye. Bye.